Hello and welcome to recording number 29 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. Today is July 9th, 2021. We're going to start with chapter number 22. A little backstory for context. Gord has been thrown into the dungeon of Count Blumu in his castle in Nurl, and has just escaped from his cell to his surprise, Geller, back from Stoink, has appeared. Just before he swatted down the warden of the jail with his manacles. All right, I'm beginning here, page number 224, chapter 22, first paragraph. Didn't I warn you, Constable, that Captain Gord was one of his august supremacy's most dangerous agents, said Geller, to a richly dressed noble accompanying the two guardsmen. It is a wonder he hasn't escaped before this, and slain half your men-at-arms in the process. The word of General Lord Nalbon Geller is unquestioned, the constable said unctuously, while looking disdainfully at the pale and filthy former prisoner who had just been prevented from braining one of his men. But how could we have known, Lord Geller, that he was other than a scheming thief? He claimed no ties to Nyrond or the Ernst. Come, Sir Mellard, don't be naive. Geller said in bluff fashion, slapping the sour-faced official on the back. Look at him even now. Does he show the slightest hint of understanding our discourse? Does his gaze or expression betray any clue? Nay, that is why he was regarded so highly by King Archibald and the noble rulers of Ernstland, too. Gord was indeed looking blank, for he understood only that his old associate Geller, a thief of Stoink, had mysteriously grown an eye, was being treated deferentially by Count Blumu's henchmen, and was here in the forsaken dungeon, evidently freeing him. Break. Well, I'm actually as taken aback as Gord is at this point. I'd forgotten this little bit of the story, and I myself was expecting a different kind of encounter here, and that he'd brain the poor warden. Now, here we again, this is something I've commented on. Within the story, there is always this theme of surprise and disguise. Well, not always, but it's a recurring theme. More often than we have, I think, even violent encounters, we have this business of Gord or someone, one of his associates, being in disguise, pulling a con. Now, we have Geller. We get supposedly Geller's full name, Nalbon Geller, and that he is a general lord. I guess King Archibald is, I'm wondering if that is the King of Nyrond. It's been mentioned before, King Archibald, and I believe it's the King of Nyrond. Yes. Now, and we know that the ruler of Ernst is the Countess and of the County of Ernst, and there is a where Radagast City is, and the Duke, Lukash is, the Duke and the Duchy of Ernst. Their individual names just seem to have escaped me. And that Geller, what Geller is doing is either pretending to be this person, or he is this person, and pretending to be something in Stoink. So here and now, he has both eyes, it appears. He's no longer one-eyed Geller from Stoink. He is now two-eyed General Lord Nalbon Geller.
I was expecting an action scene.
Yes, and it was. I mean, it was an action scene. Very interruptus there, for Gord is about to, just about to brain that warden. Or I was expecting a big fight going on and maybe have Gord recaptured. So this was a surprising twist in the story right here. Now, Geller is, I believe, an NPC, even in the second edition material. I may be wrong, but I believe he is mentioned. He may be more than just in this story itself. So we have a little more about Geller. He is disguised either, like I said, either as a thief of Stoink or a Lord General, I suspect, of Nyrond. I'm not sure what it means by mentioning the Ernst people as well. You know, the Ernst rulers and stuff. We're told that this noble is Lord Mellard. I believe this is his first mention right here. All right. I'm going to continue. It is page 224. Paragraph 4. Gord was indeed looking blank, for he understood only that his old associate Geller, a thief of Stoink... I'm sorry, I believe I've read that. Had mysteriously grown an eye, was being treated deferentially by Count Blumu's henchmen, and was here in this forsaken dungeon evidently freeing him. Well, I must admit he has a rather dazed look, which could throw off an inquisitor, said the constable. In fact, one might think him an idiot. Both men laughed heartily at this, but Gord saw no humor in a remark at his expense. He grew somewhat miffed at the whole conversation, in fact, which excluded him, and more or less treated him as a piece of beef. Thus, what is going on here, Geller? Gord demanded. Formerly one-eyed thief gave Gord a tiny, brief wink with an eye that should not have been there, and replied, "Oh, sorry, Captain, didn't mean to ignore you. Constable Mellard here took a good bit of convincing when I finally caught up with you. He actually didn't believe that you were one of our best spies, and that his august supremacy would be quite wroth with a good constable's master, Count Blimu, if Archibald learned that you were locked up in his dungeons. Imagine." Break. All right, so here we have, that it definitely is, King Archibald III of Nyrond. So he's talking about Nyrond. I assume he's pretending to be a Lord General of Nyrond. Interesting. I did mistake. I wasn't quite sure that the constable was the noble who was with them. I'm slipped up on that a little. And that it is Constable Sir Mellard. So, as a noble, it seems like he's maybe in charge of all the jails and policing going on in, Camp Lemus, Count Blemu's castle, or in Nurl. Setting books, I believe the folio or perhaps even the 83 box set, it says the land to the great bend of the Artansame, south to the Franz, to the shores of the Near Dev, is ruled by the House of Geller, whose current representative is the Countess Belisica.
That was from the 83 box set.
Great. And I believe the Countess Belisica is the Duchy of the County of Ernst.
Yes. her noble brilliancy.
So that is you know, the connection that looks like Geller, unless it's an assumed name, is actually you know, part of the House of Geller and a noble of the County of Erst, and here is linked to Nyrond. That is it. You know, that's an interesting bit of information there, because it implies a connection between Ernst, the county at least, the county of Ernst, and the Duchy of Ernst, because the Duke of the Duchy of Ernst is the brother of Countess Belisica, so that he is a Geller as well. So it seems like Geller is a member of that royal family, but is very high up in the ranks of Nyrond. I'm not sure if that is ever mentioned, that Nyrond and the Duchy and County of Ernst are linked in that way. All right. I'm going to restart, and it is page 225 and paragraph 4. Constable Sir Mellard's expression grew sour at this, and then it changed to worry as Geller continued. After all, think of his supremacy's embarrassment if word ever got out that one of his own vassals, and a recently enfeoffed one at that, starved to death in his dungeon, a trusted member of Archibald's personal staff. Then there's the slight matter of ingratitude and noblesse oblige. Not quite right to imprison a chap for saving his daughter and all. That, said Gord, seizing upon the mention of the Count's behavior toward him, I intend to settle in my own way. Captain, you are out of order, Geller interjected sternly. Such matters are the affair of your betters. I am certain his august supremacy will deal with the whole business in his own way in time. The inference was unmistakable, and the Count's constable grew pale as the impact of the word sunk in. The officials of a noble might become scapegoats in such an affair as this. I must say, your lordship, Captain Gord, there is no need for such bitterness. Mistake, and a father's natural desire to preserve his daughter's name and all, which will soon be rectified with none the worse for it. None the worse, Gord shot back. None the worse, you say. You will be recompensed, sir, and handsomely. Never fear, Sir Mellor interjected hastily. And, of course, you shall receive the personal apology of his lordship Blemmu. Yes, yes, that's quite proper and will suffice, said Geller before Gord managed another furious word. But this dungeon is no place for chit-chat. Come, constable, let us repair to above, where my officer can bathe and be properly attired while you and I exchange a few pleasantries. I would learn of your struggle against the Jebli tribes to the north. Break. There's a little information here. It's certainly interesting. And now, you know, to talk on previous thing, here's a comment that the Ernst states are former provinces of Nyrond that gained Palatine status in the Council of Rel Mord. I'd also like to know of their connection here to Nurl and the Count Blimmu, because he definitely or is it Baron Blemmu? He definitely, you know, is... you know, worried about what Nyrond and the Ernst think, and his Lord Constable here is a little unctuous about things. We have mention of the Jebli tribes, and the Jebli are the goblins, I believe. And it also seems that here's another comment. Now, Nyrond also seems to make claims in Adrian Nurl, in the Adrian Nurl region. And Jebli is Flan for goblins. All right. We also see here that Gord you know, has suffered greatly from this situation, because normally he's very quick on the uptake and really falls into a separate character. But here he's so upset about the imprisonment that he really is having a hard time assuming some kind of pleasant character or even a rough character, just something that he isn't so angry and is openly talking about getting revenge against Count Blemmo, which is very uncharacteristic for the Gord character. He would always seems to have been always to be in command of himself, and here he is a little wild from that imprisonment. And you know, it was a good deal of time alone in that jail cell, but I think that is interesting that he has really changed right here. Now, he's also been said to have been enfeoffed, and I would assume that means a knighthood and of some kind of fiefdom, where he would, you know, be ruler of some land. But he's also, Geller immediately jumps in, stopping Gord from saying anything too bad, and then is talking about leaving it to his betters. So even if Gord is a captain in the Nyrond, and he's a trusted spy, he is still not considered, upper nobility, the way that Geller kind of insists that, not insists, but implies that Geller is part of that upper nobility.
Well, if he were part of the upper nobility, there's no way the Count wouldn't have known him.
Yes, and having him as a recently elevated in fiefd, that would make it kind of doubly sure that they could easily say, well, you don't know him because he's been a spy and hidden and right. Rewarded for his actions.
So that adds some plausibility to his story.
Yeah, and I really like what's been happening for the most part in this story. We had some situations out escaping from Stoink that I thought, even for, this book, a fantasy novel, were very implausible and even uncharacteristic. But I do like this little twist right here. So I think the story's advancing well. It does show part of Gord's personality here, I think it kind of enriches the story with this happening here and the surprise twist of Geller popping up.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're starting to see Gord get caught up in a bigger stream of events.
Yes, and that is the thing. Gord, at this point, Gord has just been, he's been at a certain level, and he has done the adventuring and the traveling, and he is moving up, it seems, in a kind of spy way. Like it was noted that how much in the last adventure with him freeing Evelyn, how much it was James Bond-like using all his thief skills. And in a sense, Gord has progressed from a regular thief, who's stealing, who's conning people, who's, cheating, and who's doing basic thievery. And now his actions are kind of they shifted a little, showed what you could do with the campaign. And right here, he's obviously involved in something higher level, if Geller can take such an interest in him and free him, because really, what did Geller know? Geller, I wasn't mentioned as somebody who was in on the escape with Evelyn, and not unsurprising, because he was supposed to be, a Stoink man. He was supposed to be from Stoink, and going along with the basic robbery that they did of the Horn Society mercenary, leader who was trying to recruit and start trouble out of Stoink. But already you could see that maybe it wasn't mentioned that Geller was directing attentions, maybe brought Gord to that place because he is a spy, and he might have done that for reasons, you know, of his own, rather than just stealing the money. At this point, things have changed here.
I think at the point of Geller's introduction, that he said that among one of his jobs or titles was he was a leader in Skilling Thieves Guild.
Yes.
So it implied that he did much more. And maybe as some reason for like why Geller would extend himself, he was very impressed at Gord's work finding out that the hierarchs were behind the scenes in Stoink.
Yes, and they were both elevated. You know, they were both, Gord was made in as a subaltern in that guard of the castle, the constabulary guard of Stoink, who are traditionally the castle guards, a very important, and you can see how it allowed Gord originally to just pass through the other guardsmen, because he was now an officer. And so, you know, already Gord had, gotten a sign. Here he is publicly elevated as himself. Now, here we have a comment that this scene is more of a sign that Gord is now a mature character, as he isn't scared of anyone and sees himself as meriting just treatment and revenge against anyone. And yes, and in a way that is a little surprising, because Gord usually rolls with the punches. When he met Theobald as a child, he saw that Geller was sadistic, and so when Geller was slapping him around and enjoying it, Gord reacted in the way that Theobald wanted. But as soon as he left Theobald, he showed to the character who was the thief trainer, whose name eludes me at the moment.
Fergo? Was it Fergo?
Maybe. It's Fergo, I think.
Yeah.
That he showed him that he was aware of having successfully escaped or been taken for his actions, his disguise as a plague victim, had been, you know, a good mark for him, and immediately changed from, the one that was scared of Theobald, which was an act. And so it is still surprising. Yes, I think it was even mentioned that they've reached a different stage when he was with Everly in their escape, but at the same time, the story has reached a different stage here. And that should prove pretty enjoyable, because the way the story is going, Gord is traveling to places, encountering all these different cultures. And that is exactly the kind of thing that I want to get out of the book. I want to cover the lore. And that is, you know, an amazing thing. And then I want to cover the story with Gord and how he's progressing. And then I want to carry cover and comment on the game system. When we get to see Gygax's way in this book of his work with description, like he did when describing that meal with Geller, it actually made me hungry. Yeah. And then, so there's really three major things that I think I'm working on, I realize, with the commentary. The story, the lore, the rules. And I think we get a good dose of all of them. I like the story, but I still am mostly interested in the lore, and then how the book deals with the AD&D rule system. And finally, the information that we gather about Gord and the other characters within the story. That is interesting, but it's, I think, of the least use for pulling lore and setting material from the book. And there is a tremendous amount of setting material right here. I, for one, wasn't really aware, because this is not an area I've done much with myself, of the link between Ernst and Geller and the Kingdom of Nyrond. So that to me is very revealing right here.
Good stuff.
It is. It's also mentioned that the Jebli are tribes of the north, and we know, you know, what happened in the setting material with the overwhelming of Spine Castle and such. And it's asked if we know Gord's race and culture. His culture, not his ancestral culture, but Gord was brought up as an orphan in the city of Greyhawk. So he, he really, his culture is Greyhawk, city of Greyhawk. But not only from the slum quarters, the poorest area, but Gord's has a knowledge of certain things. Like early on, when he is put on trial as a 12-year-old, he is very aware that he is a free citizen of the city of Greyhawk, regardless of being the lowest of classes. And, he feels he can't be, enslaved because he is a free citizen.
Yeah, I remember that was something he took a lot of pride in.
Yes, and that really speaks, because he is of the lowest class, and he can be killed very easily by the officials in the workhouse, and his death from work, overwork, and starvation and such, but he's still a free citizen, and it matters to him. He is said to appear like the Rene, which is one of the reasons mentioned that they took to him. His actions, the Rene barge folk adopted him, but he also had the look of a Rene. He was, physically, I think, darker skinned. Even his height, I don't believe, was a factor that would have pulled him away. So I assume that the Rene are also fairly short and, darker skinned. All right. I am going to restart. It is page 226, paragraph 3. Apologizing for not suggesting such a thing himself, Sir Mellor led the way to the castle above, going off to a parlor with the man he called Lord Nalbon Geller, while Gord was hustled off to a room where a valet de chambre fussed and bustled. In a short time, Gord was scrubbed, oiled, barbered, and arrayed in silk and velvet of ebon hue. When he came back from the dressing room to the main chamber of these quarters, he found that his confiscated weapons had been returned, cleaned and polished, complete with new belt and scabbards. He checked the dagger, found it intact, and noted that it had been lightly oiled to prevent any spot of corrosion on its keen blade. Besides his weapons lay his purse, and examination proved that its contents, 8 bright gold orbs and a scattering of lesser coins, had not been tampered with. Gord smiled wryly at all of this, from one extreme of treatments to the other, and all in a matter of minutes. Touching on the coinage that Gord had left with, I believe, 10 gold pieces in change. So I'm not sure where he spent that money, because a gold piece is quite a bit of money right there. I don't believe he spent it in Owlsthorpe, but maybe along the way. In fact, maybe it was mentioned that they did spend some time in a better inn. So pretty expensive for out there in the boondocks before he got to Nurl.
Yeah, that was Middlemarch, or I forget the name of it.
Mid Meadow.
Yeah, in Owlsthorpe, he only spent a couple of drabs or copper commons, I think, because he broke that guy's lock to the barn.
Yes, I remember that now. I'm afraid even some of the recent stuff can elude me. But yeah, when he broke the barn and paid for food and probably overpaid, but still, I don't think he cashed in gold there, but maybe at one of the fancy inns. It's not something that really throws it off, but he did spend quite a bit of money there if he's spending gold pieces. Pardon me, I have a thunderstorm outside, so I don't know how much of those little explosions of electricity are affecting things here.
Headed my way soon.
Now, we have a comment here that Gord's look as a René is probably added to by his low-class dressing cut. I think the René, even the Outlaw, have perhaps their own style of dress as well. But yeah, to outsiders, more than likely the René would instantly be seen as low class, even in their cultural clothing. Now, it's also mentioned here that the Iridians and René can have a similar skin tones, especially when tanned. So if you are trying to use, I personally don't use much on, you know, skin color in among humans in the game, allowing just a general, whatever the players want to be, I usually just use. I guess that those the thunder is kind of Thor playing at bowling and knocking pins down outside my house here. And it's commented, yes, I have my own special effects here for this recording. We have also a little comment here that I might want to make a little comment here about the importance of oiling a dagger or a sword and keeping a sheath clean. And it is something that should be... It's another little tiny thing, that, and this would be about the rules, that it adds to your role-play experience to keep the players thinking about such things. Because, you know, I hear where in these various things where players don't think about just sheathing a sword without cleaning it off. And I think it, depending on what your players want, keeping that thought in mind and then them having to deal with the results... That can be an addition to the game, or some players may find that a little annoying, you know, too much detail. Personally, I like it, but it really depends on the players. And there's a comment here about switching the readings to Ravenloft. Now, there's at least one Ravenloft story that deals with a Greyhawk NPC. And that is King of the Dead. And it's going to be about a year before I finish these Gord books. Eventually, I believe I'll do King of the Dead. I've never really read through it or indexed it or everything. So since I want to do it anyway, probably well after I finished with the Gygax stories, I'll do that book as well. But I'd also like to read the setting books by Carl Sargent at that first. And, you know, like Ivid the Undying. All right, I'm going to restart here. It is page 226, paragraph 4. Then a knock on the door, and the valet ushered in an officer of the Count's Guard, come to escort Gord to the chamber where Geller and Sir Mellard waited. The now grand young thief strode as an honored guest through the halls of Castle Blemu to find what awaited him next. He was shown to a small dining salon, whose board had been set for a repast. Geller was there along with Sir Mellard and several other of the Count's underlings. After Gord was seated, the constable explained to him that his lordship of Blemu was indisposed and sent his regrets, but that he, Sir Mellard, would serve as host for this banquet in honor of Captain Gord's good fortune. Gord let that questionable remark pass, for the smell and sight of the feast laid out before him on the table were overwhelming his senses. He was famished after having been nearly starved for so long, and all he cared to think about now was eating. The banquet commenced immediately, and more vintages and dishes appeared at intervals as the diners fell to. It was some time before Gord's stomach felt satisfied, and he began to pay attention to the conversation. The talk was of the warfare with the humanoid bands still infesting the upper regions of the Blemmu Hills, and how the Count's forces were gradually driving these hateful creatures northward. Gord heard that companies of gnomes were assisting, and that the Radikins were holding Johnsport and besieging Spine Castle, for they too were desirous of revenge upon the humanoid inhabitants of Bone March. Revenge was a subject dear to his heart, so Gord began to question various persons about the matter. He learned that some years previous, hordes of orcs, goblins, and their ilk had taken occupation of the Bone March, a former dependency of the Overking of Erdi. After that time, this area had been a haven for all sorts of evil and degenerate types, and a base for incursion into the surrounding territories by the humanoids and their human associates. However, when Nyrin managed to take Nurl, and Dunstan was made Lord Blemmu, the newly created Count began to expand his fief northward, displacing the humanoids by force of arms. This effort was assisted by gnomes, for these demi-humans hated the invaders and were loosely allied with His August Supremacy, Archibald III, King of Nyrin, and Liege of Lord Blemmu. Break. So, it is, it's a very interesting little bit here. Spine Castle, in the setting, was a large city that was overwhelmed by monsters and humanoids, and a very exciting place to adventure because it is this occupied evil city. Now, here we have that the Radikins are besieging Spine Castle, and that probably should be the north going to the south. We have mention of the gnomes, who are a big part of the Bone March area. As you know, there is a very hilly country, very much gnome territory there, and that they're assisting, and they hate the goblins and they hate the orcs. We're shown that this really is a part of Nyrond, and the Count Count's liege is Archibald, the King of Nyrond. So it makes this whole area here around Nurl a part of Nyrond, it seems. And then we have mention of Johnsport, which is a city controlled in the north by the Radikins. I'm not sure if the setting has it more aligned with the interests of Nyrond, but it definitely is helping to, or just the Count Blemmu here, it is definitely helping with the war going on against the goblins and Spine Castle and the monsters that have taken over this area. All right.
I think it was mentioned when Gord passed through the Flinnies that he saw some gnomes, but they left each other alone.
Yeah, and then here we have that I'm not sure if those mountains are the Flinny Hills or a different range up here, closer to Spine Castle, but
the Rakers, I think.
All right, and here there is a large gnome community. The only, I know that the Kron Hills down there south of Verbabank has a very large gnome population, and here we have another one where there are enough gnomes to have survived this area that has been overwhelmed with monsters and is now striking a blow against them.
Well, I just found something interesting on the map.
Right.
Remember we talked about Gord, leaving Blue Moon Castle and going to Nurl?
Yes.
I found where Blue Moon Castle is on this map, and it's like way out of whack, fortunately. Oh. Unfortunately.
All right. So it's not near Nurl, or
it's way up at on the Tesser Torrent.
Yeah.
If you go up, oh my. Up,
oh
yes.
My.
Yeah.
Okay, and that is the comment is, this is Anna's Myers map, wonderful thing. And what it is, it's that, you know, not everything can be, you know, perfect when you do this, especially because we're dealing with so many different, you know, creators of lore. There are few inconsistencies, even within this story that Gygax writes, you know, about, you know, where locations are. But here, definitely, Blue Moon Castle is right there in Nurl. So, and it seems, here's a thing here, that it you know, that is Blue Moon a surname? And yes, it does appear to be. Yeah, but
I thought it was an anagram for Bloom.
That's right. That's right. I forgot to mention that on the regular Cannon Fire Discord. Yes. Is Blue Moo, and the way that the count is, it seems like it might be, is Blue Moo an anagram or you know, something for Blemu and Bloom linked together. And yes, that is very interesting, because, you know, that business of anagrams and names of real people put into the setting, that has been commented on quite a bit. And yeah, you know, there are a number of things on this area that we've discovered. Owlthorpe seems to be wrong, and what is that? The town of Fasselham?
Fassel Farm.
It's definitely on the wrong side of the map. It should be across the river, because they forded the river. And then I realized from the description, it says that they're traveling to the left, but they're going south. So that would mean that Fasselharm should be north of Nurl, and it should be west of Nurl, because if you're traveling south, then left is the east. And I think that is the confusion there about Fasselharm. I think Fasselham is that, reading it without realizing that they're traveling south and that they're on the other side of the river, I think you then think that it has to be south of Nurl and east of it. And it's just a mirror. And kind of the same thing with Owlsthorpe. If you think that what they're not traveling north, that they're traveling south, then that puts that Owlsthorpe south of that rough trail. But really, it should be north. Yeah, it is fairly confusing right here.
Yeah, I thought Owlsthorpe was roughly in the position of Glandevin.
Yes, it's much smaller, because it's supposed to be a hamlet rather than a village or town. So it's a small place also, according to the Gord books. Now, I'm not sure offhand. I'm pretty sure that Fasselham is only mentioned in Saga of Old City, so that should put the location of it in a different place.
Yeah, I think it would probably be like right before Nurl, right?
Yeah, I mean, because we know
that they think they came there first before they got to Nurl. So
there's a mention of a half day's travel.
Right.
So we can take what is the general traveling rate. You know, they're on horseback, and figure out how much you generally traveled in half a day, and then you could place it on the map. So I think we can find a very close location. We know that it is east of the river, so you know, we can replace it and maybe have to change the roadway that is shown, shifting over more to the west than it is.
Now, is there a place on Cannon Fire to post queries about map location?
Yes, there is. Especially, it is about Anna Meyer's
map. I couldn't find it.
It's pinned. It's in the general Greyhawk. It's not one of the additional Greyhawks. If you look at the top of the page there, there are several pinned topics. And discussion about Anna Meyer's maps is there. And what you can do to find it is if you look at it has one of the most recent. Right now, I've got a comment up there, so my name's the last one. Somebody may have commented on that, but you're going to see then that it is a July 2021 post. And, most things are not. So if you look there, it is right at the top of the page. If you go to forums, it's right by people introducing themselves. But it is that the topic is just World of Greyhawk commentary. I don't know, not exactly that, but it is about World of Greyhawk.
There it is. I see it. Yep.
All right.
It has the sticky.
Yes, it's because it's pinned right there.
Did you notice that this discussion has a new link right on the main page?
Yes. That's great. Wonderful. It's got the little red ball on it saying
it says new. Yep. Thank you.
Yes, that is wonderful. And I'm hoping that, people take advantage of that and get a chance. And I really want to get those page numbers down so that people can look at the index of Shot Saga of the Old City. And this is 29 hours today. So it is getting to be a vast amount of material. I don't know. People may want to start at recording one, but I think for the lore, it's going to be very useful to know which of the recordings covers what topics. So that, if they want to find out about the Atloy or the Renee, they can just look that up, in the index and then track the recordings back and listen to that.
I think a number of people are actually listening to it because I've seen discussion about it in other Discords. Yeah. So it's a good thing. I think more people are listening than actually participate.
There is supposed to be a Greycast, podcast about this that I just did with them today.
Oh, nice!
But that won't be out until at least like Labor Day. Because, they're doing the work ahead of time. And I urge people to come. And now there's going to be, they've got three or so episodes are out already. And very nice to, go look at those podcasts. And I think you'll enjoy that and the recordings that we're doing right here. And more useful than just going right through I think one to whatever we reach, 40 or 50 recordings, will be the ability to go and track down information. There is more information about the Rene and Stoink than any other place in published material. And I think that is true of a lot of the books. This is going to be something like, with all seven novels, about 2,400 pages material on the Greyhawk setting, and also later on the Abyss. But it's all
great. And new places. I mean,
this is a real treasure.
Maybe not new, but undocumented, like mainly.
Yes, because here I am. I've been reading this since the 80s, and I'm discovering things that I never discovered before. I do like that Bloom Blemu because it is. It's an anagram. It's got to be Bloom.
Yeah, who else? He's kind of a jerk, too.
That is very funny. That is a wonderful catch there.
I couldn't find Johnsport on the map either.
There should be north of Spine Castle, I believe.
Yeah, I looked, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I believe it's in Radic and north of Spine Castle. I know Yeah, and here's a comment that there's way more in this book than I expected. It is full of lore. And I don't know if everybody will, but I really love the game information. All right, and here we're getting a thing. No,
there it is.
Yeah, I guess it's on the coast as it should be, as a port.
Thank you.
And I am not sure where, I guess it isn't. You can see that road. There's a road to the west of Johnsport. And I believe that is what leads to a Spine Castle. That's wonderful to see on this map. And, you know, it gives you a good idea of what Radic looks like. And this is off of Anna Meyer's map right here. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page number 227. And it is the third paragraph. Great Kingdom, as Airdy styled itself, was in turmoil as usual, though the Overking was unwilling or unable to make any response to this assault on territory that was technically his to protect. The area beyond the Teaser Torrent had always been much trouble for the Overking anyway, as had been the Bone March. Distant and well-armed Marcher lords were always rebellious and bothersome at best, and the Overking undoubtedly reasoned that such troubles were better vested with Rel Mord, the capital of King Archibald's domain, than with his throne in Roxas. In addition, the Overking perceived the Herzog of Erdi's semi-independent North Province as a worse threat than a Nirondel county west of the Teaser Torrent, Swift Waters. Let the Herzog deal with the matter if he could, reasoned the Overking, thus keeping the Herzog and the King of Nyron busy with each other. Break. And so, here we are getting some information about the Great Kingdom. And it's nicely presented here, very live. You know, I mean, one of the things about doing this as a dramatic novel and a narrative of a character is that, even setting material is dry, and instead, doing this as part of Gord's adventures adds life even to the material like this. That the Overking, we're seeing his plans. We're seeing why he's not doing things. And we're learning about we've got the North Province in rebellion. And Nyrond, as separate, but he's not dealing with them because he has trouble himself within the Great Kingdom. And then it just gives us a good overview of what is happening here. They mentioned that Rel Mord is the capital of Nyrond, and Roxas the capital of the Great Kingdom. Not really much detail on them at this point, but, and then we have that the Teaser Torrent, the west of it, definitely in the upper regions, is not, it is not really, the Overking is not interested in that area. All right, so now we have a map that is a kind of an expansion of the Darlene map, which came with the folio in the 1983 box set. And it shows the direct passage through the Bone Mart to Johnsport in Radic. So we have Spine Castle, a conquered city, up in the north of the Bone March, and between the areas, it leads to Johnsport. So you can see how the Radicans have a very big interest in what happens in the Bone March. There's also, on this map, it shows hilly regions in this area between Radic and Bone March. And we show some hilly regions to the south and mountainous regions to the north. So when we're talking about gnomes, that is exactly the kind of landscape, especially so far that I've seen in the hills. So that is exactly the areas where they might have colonies or even towns and cities. But enough of them to have survived this invasion of you know, humanoids of all sorts, orcs and goblins and other monsters that have, you know, years ago took over Spine Castle. All right, we're getting pretty close to the end. I'm going to restart right here. We're on the last paragraph of page 227. The affair had come out somewhat differently, however. Smarting over a humiliating defeat by the forces of the Bone March, the Herzog ignored Blemmu and marched a newly gathered host of soldiers back into the humanoid-controlled territory to avenge himself. But the Herzog's host was again defeated, and the broken remnants retreated in disarray all the way to Isfair, the capital of North Province. However, the series of skirmishes and battles that led to the second humiliation also took their toll upon the hordes of humanoids and their human allies. Left in a battered and seriously weakened condition, they were ripe for attack by Radic. Lord Baron of that Palatinate did just that, desiring to extend his territory southward. One of his armies sallied through the pass leading from Radic to Spine Castle, laying siege to the later town, while another force came secretly through Loftwood Forest and fell upon Johnsport, taking it almost immediately. The current situation was that both Radic and Blemmu were attempting to gobble up as much land as possible before the chiefs of the humanoids and the petty human lords of Bone March were able to regroup, reinforce themselves, and act in concert to prevent further erosion of their holdings. Many of the Bone March's raiding bands and tribes were still in the North Province, fighting and pillaging. There was some question as to whether these raiders would eventually return to their homeland, or whether the Herzog's reassembling army would manage to pick these bands off one by one. All right, this is, you know, rarely worthy of comment here, in that one of the things that I immediately know is I wasn't aware that Johnsport had actually been captured. And here it's talking about how, you know, how Johnsport was retaken or taken by the Radicers. Now, I'm not sure, was Johnsport part of the Bone March, which it appears to be, or was it part of Radic? But it definitely now is part of Radic. And they've retaken it. And the area in the north, is a former part, you know, Bone March. And we see to the south that the hilly region is the Blemmu Hills. And the river, I can't make out, is it the teaser torrent there that goes all the way to the north?
Yeah, yes, that's the river.
Yeah. It's commented here that Cook and Sargent did not go, I believe, with the taking of Johnsport. That, you know, that actually, it makes a good deal of sense, as that area, I believe it's the northern hills and mountains that saw the humanoids descend from, not really Loftwood, which is above Johnsport. Yeah, and although, you know, and then the second thing, although, you know, back in the, it's common that humans don't ply ships and manage ports, but I, you know, down on the Wild Coast, Highport has been taken over by humanoids as well. I don't know. There's also mention, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought right here. Yes, common evil humanoids and brigands do all the real work in Highport. And it's also mentioned here that humans are running areas of the Taken Bone March, and that they, you know, that they are like little marcher lords. And so, you know, there is a big human involvement as well. All right, we've hit 7 o'clock, and I am going to close up for tonight. This is, again, July 9th, 2021. I'm going to conclude on page number, I believe it is 228. And so I plan on being back for this weekend and continuing things. Had a little break yesterday due to some voice trouble. All right, I'm going to, anything I wanted to add, I'm going to call up Craig right here.
That's fine. You sound pretty good.
Yeah, I'm, it's a little, my voice is a little rough, but
it's better.
Yeah, it was very weak, and I had a lot of trouble with, you know, talking and keeping my, you know, just sentences going, like right there. Well, I'm ending it. Here's Craig.